fellow citizens of the comedy film nerd universe.
I thought you were going to say university.
Sure. The comedy film nerd universe, CFNU. How's everybody at the State Cutlery University? We're accredited.
We're in room 228.
Oh, hey, buddy. Episode 228. Yeah, it's... get out your syllabi, kids, and your highlighters, because today's
going
to be...
You're going to school.
You're going to school. Nice.
We got a lot to talk about. We're going to talk about The Expendables, Finding Vivian Maier. I have an Asylum update, thanks to you fans. We're going to do another ad from Kickstarter and talk about some DVDs and then do a special extra review of Locke that you just saw.
Just saw Locke. That'll be fun.
And we got an amazing guest today.
Yes, we do. And I want to thank everybody who came out to the shows that I just did in Minneapolis. That was a lot of fun, and did stand up at Acme and then Doug Loves Movies at the Women's Club of Minneapolis, this theater that was built in 1927, which I love old theaters. They claim that it is haunted by Tiny Tim because he died there. So
what happened?
I think he tripped through the tulips. I think that's what happened.
Oh my. Is he a tiny ghost?
Yeah, he's a tiny ghost. No, you're just a ukulele floating around. An high-pitched, So that was so fun. There was a lot of film nerd fans that were at that show, which was was great. And
Or were there?
Yeah, there was a lot of film nerd aberrations that were there.
Some of our best guests are deceased ghosts. I guess that's redundant, deceased ghosts.
So yeah, thanks everybody who came out to that. What else should we talk about? The podcast festival, hotels are going quickly.
Yes, there are still a few left at the discounted rate, but you gotta get them quickly.
You gotta get them quickly. We have a code on our website, right, on a link to the tickets?
The tickets for the festival, yeah. And then if you go to lapodfest.com, you can click through and get the discounted hotel room rates.
Right. And we are going to be adding, we're going to live video stream the whole festival.
Yes, we're working on setting up that apparatus right now.
As we speak. That should be done in the next week or so.
And, we got to announce this. We got earbuds t-shirts.
Oh,
we're doing pre-sales. Right now, we have the t-shirts. I'm looking at the boxes right now. And for $40, you get the t-shirt that will ship out right now. And when the movie's done, we'll send you the download.
The artwork was done by film nerd fan Paige Branson.
In Baltimore.
Don't pronounce the T. Doesn't it?
Is that true?
Yeah, they all say Baltimore.
I've never heard that.
You know what
before.
People don't realize about Baltimore? It's just like The Wire.
Yeah.
It is, yeah. She's selling Pandemic, and there's bodies everywhere. And between that, she had the time
to do some comic book art.
Right.
So, yeah, these shirts are amazing. You gotta check them out in the store. And the artwork's awesome.
They did, and Angela Warner at Estoy Merchandise did a wonderful job with them.
Yes,
so they look great. So it's a way to get your shirts and
American made too.
Yeah, suck it.
Yeah, you drop the A like you're supposed to. American-made.
American-made.
Just like doing America.
Yeah.
Yep.
So get your earbuds swaggery.
Take your country back and buy a t-shirt.
Yeah, there you go, assholes.
Take your country back. One t-shirt at a time, brother. One t-shirt at a time.
Amazing.
Well, let us formally introduce our guest.
Yes.
You've heard her velvety, beautiful voice. Ladies and gentlemen, Miss Janet Varney is here in the Nerd Cave.
Comedian, podcaster, and voice of Korra on Legend of Korra.
Hello.
I said that I was answering a phone.
Yeah.
Hello? Hello?
Can I help you?
I don't think anyone's there, guys. Are we taking our first caller? I don't understand the show. Oh, guys.
But first, I want to tell our listeners, too, that we saw you at Comic-Con. I saw you signing when it was The Legend of Korra. Like, you had a fair amount of the cast there. And, you know, it was this huge line. I'm like, oh, let me just, you know, walk by. And it was literally an hour later after I had done some shopping and walked around. You were still signing for the fans. It was really
cool. Yeah, it was
cool.
A long one. It was really nice. It was fun. Yeah, it was cool because we did have so many extra cast members. Usually it's just PJ and David Faustino and me. And then Mike and Brian, the creators. But this year we had Mindy Sterling and John Michael Higgins, and actually PJ wasn't there. But those two are so funny what I just remembered when you were describing that was that there was a Nickelodeon photographer there, and there was this sort of weird glass cube that was, again, transparent, and she was taking a bunch of pictures inside of it, and so then we just started horsing around, like, pretending to be smashed up against the wall of the glass cube. But what I was thinking was, oh, God, I'm afraid to ever see those pictures, because it is one of those things where, in the moment, you get really giddy with really funny people around you, and then don't think about the fact that, like, whatever stupid bits you're doing for the photographer will live forever. So that's what I just thought. Was like, oh, no. I just remembered, like, all the faces I was making and, like, when's that stuff going to be available to the public?
Should be instant.
Yeah, I know. Yeah. Actually, I don't even think it's up. Maybe because it was a Nickelodeon photographer. Maybe Nickelodeon saw them and were like, oh, dear God, burn those. Yes. Is that how photography works? You have to burn things?
And they're, you know, Nickelodeon, they're still using film.
So yeah, exactly. And
there's a lot of problems with that whole photo shoot.
So. I know, it really was. Oh, my gosh.
And you've been doing your podcast, JV Club.
Mm-hmm, and I'm so excited to do it at LA Podfest. It's at noon on Saturday.
That's correct.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I'm just getting ready. I mean, really, it's winding down. Boys of Summer.
That was so fun.
I snuck in Grandma Elwood. Actually, your episode comes out this week. I don't know when this comes out.
It'll be today.
Oh, okay. Today. So in 2 days, you can listen to Graham's episode.
It was.
You can download it for free.
It was such a cool thing. I think I told you that I felt like I came over to do trig homework, and then we ended up just like talk because you play these games. Like I just, it was, I really, it was like high school in the best sense. Like,
yeah. Did you fail your test the next day?
I blew it off. You know, I paid the worth it. I paid the smart kid to take the test.
That's the way to do it. That's the way to get smart.
No, wait, I bullied him.
Yeah, there you go. As long as you didn't do the work, God forbid.
Yeah.
No, it was really fun. So that's perfect. So check that out, guys. It comes out on Thursday. It's free on iTunes, on the Nerdist Network.
You ask these very sort of in-depth questions, but not...
About trigonometry,
but not in a... It's the beautiful thing about podcasting. It wasn't an interview. You and I were just having a conversation where you were asking me a bunch of kind of...
Very pointed questions.
Yeah, well, yeah, but even pointed has a negative connotation because pointed is
like
well, where were you?
Right.
You know, like,
every one of my questions for Graham starts out like this. Isn't it true that you? It's very confrontational.
Oh, this is brutal.
Very confrontational.
Yeah, she has her dog staring at
Please
me.
Please answer the question.
No, don't avoid what I'm saying. No, it was really. It's a really cool show, so I recommend everybody to listen to it.
Thank you so much.
Yeah, it's awesome. JV Club.
Hey.
Hey.
I would go to a Muppet.
Nope. Give work it. Snaps. I did it. Where I made it even more Muppety. Yeah. No, it's fine.
Hashtag work it. All right. Well, let's talk about some motion pictures.
Yes, I need to talk about the Expendables 3.
Okay,
you
Chris.
I have to talk about it.
Chris has been on this bandwagon.
Now, people ask me, why are you excited about the Expendables? And here's why, in a nutshell. It's the year 2014, and yet I get to watch a new 80s action movie.
I get
That's why.
I get that. And I will say, I did sort of stumble through the first two, but I don't.
It reminds me of when you went to the Maid Cafe in Tokyo.
Right.
And they took you to one that was like kind of, and you're like, no. Biggest, dumbest, loudest
one. Yeah. Not one that's taking it seriously.
No.
The one for the tourists. Yeah. Oh, and then that's, yeah.
You want this one. And then that's also when we went to the robot restaurant, which is the biggest, loudest, dumbest
thing.
This
all sounds wonderful.
Oh, you have
to. It was amazing.
Yeah. I'm dying to go to Tokyo. I've never been.
It was the experience of a lifetime.
I'm going back.
I know you're going back. Oh, it's crazy.
So cool. I know I'm mad at you still. I forgot to carry that anger with me after
the podcast. I forgot
how angry I was and jealous. Now it's back. It's back. But I didn't feel like the first one was that funny. Not to steal your thunder, but the second one, they were like, oh, this should be funnier? That's exactly what happened.
The first one, they weren't really sure in the tone, like, should we make this more serious action with a couple jokes, or is it, no, this is kind of camp. Right. And I thought the second one, because Sylvester Stallone didn't direct it, they got it completely right. The second one was the best one. The second one was really The Empire Strikes Back of the Expendables trilogy.
Oh my God, they're so lucky that you just made that comparison. They'll never get a better compliment than that.
That's it. That's really.
That is.
It's really the Christoph Kreslowski's trilogy of the Red, White, and Blue trilogy.
So
that is the robot restaurant of comparisons.
Yes, that's exactly right. And that's with these movies. You got to take them with a grain of salt. You really have to go in knowing what you're getting into. And
I think more than one grain. I think you take a salt lick.
You got to take a salt lick. Yeah, because it's one of those movies. There's bullets are flying everywhere. It's an 80s action movie. There's no blood. You know, Antonio Banderas has machine guns in both hands with apparently no recoil to them at all when he's firing them.
Magic bullets. Endless bullets.
No one reloads. And
reloading's for pussies. Yeah. I mean, let's be
and when you have a wave of enemy soldiers coming at you, and then when Sylvester Stallone goes, there's another wave coming in, you know that's the exact same actors just coming in again to do another shoot. Right. You know, because you have one actor who's playing. You have one actor who's playing, you know, Soldier 1, Soldier 4, Soldier 7, helicopter pilot. Right. You know, that's just one guy that's doing all of that. And watching this movie, and then this occurred to me as I'm watching, I'm like, that actor next to Mel Gibson looks familiar. There are two actors in Expendables that are in Asylum.
What? Yeah. No way.
Yes. And I'm like, how do I recognize these actors? And I only thought there was one, so I put on Facebook, name the actor that's in both the new Expendables movie and Asylum, and people started giving in multiple answers. There's actually two. Bulgarian actors that are in both that have like one line or whatever. But here's the thing about this movie. There's a ton of stars in it, obviously, 80s action stars. Mel Gibson plays a great villain, not as good as Jean-Claude Van Damme, but it's impossible to look at Mel Gibson in a movie thinking, God, what an asshole. You know, that kind of like you can't really separate it as much, but he reminds you too of why you liked him in the 80s, because he's playing an 80s action villain,
right?
And
who is also a current racist.
Yes. and there's just so many people in this
That's
movie.
What makes him so great. And
you know, well,
he's actually
how else are you going to cast him at this point?
Yeah.
You know,
right.
That's about
what
it.
Else could you do?
But, I saw that Beaver movie.
Yeah.
Puppet Beaver.
I saw that Beaver movie.
I didn't see that one. Not the other Beaver. Man
movie
Without a Face.
Yeah.
I remember that one. It was like, it's hard to be sympathetic on him with him now. Like, but I'm watching the movie, and really, there's nowhere else you can go. After Expendables 2, there's not much. I'm like, okay, bullets, guys, you know, jokes about aging. And then they added like a bunch of new, younger actors that kind of like take the place of the Expendables, but then you know what's going to happen. The old team still comes back and like shows these young whippersnappers how it's done. And the one who almost steals the movie, too, is Antonio Banderas. He's absolutely hysterical in this movie. He keeps submitting fake resumes because they keep turning him down. So every time he like keeps submitting resumes, and then when they meet him again, I'm like, oh, it's you again. Stop submitting resumes to be an Expendable. And there's not a lot of backstory or character development.
Whoa.
I know you're going to find this hard to believe. I know you're going to find this hard to believe. You're like, it's not like, well, maybe they'll go in a different direction or set something up. And I'm like, no, this is pretty much it. Just find some ruins, some tanks, and some fake guns and put some helicopters in.
Bad guys with accents?
Yeah. I mean, they made a couple really funny jokes, like when Mel Gibson is like, what? How hard is it to kill 10 men? You'd think by now you'd at least wound one of them, you know? So there's a lot of like insider jokes like that are kind of fun. Wesley Snipes is funny in it. And
how much do people get paid? I know this is probably something you discussed before, but when you have a movie like this, how much are people agreeing to get paid?
That's a great question. I don't know, because you've got such a huge cast and you wonder, is it a most favored nations kind of thing where everyone kind of gets the same, or is it like, does Antonio Banderas get a little bit more than Wesley Snipes? Like, who knows?
Wow.
I don't know how you would even,
I don't know how you do that. Or do you just go,
or does Kelsey Grammer get some crazy amount of money for like three scenes? Who knows how they do it? All I know is, you know, Sylvester Stallone probably got a fair amount of money
he's one of the owners
of the franchise. But it really is the kind of movie. The second one's definitely my favorite, but this is the kind of movie go in expecting a big, dumb, loud 80s action movie, and you won't be disappointed.
Okay. And you need no backstory.
You need zero backstory.
You can walk into any of these mid-whatever and
The interesting thing about these
movies, mid-movie,
see if you can, for half price, see the second half of the movie.
See if you can catch up and figure out what's going on.
Yeah.
And I really think, too, it's such a specific audience, these movies. Like, if you don't have that 80s action movie as a reference, I can see how you wouldn't be able to sit through any of these.
Mm-hmm. Well, the thing
who are all these old people in this action that makes no sense? Right. That kind of thing.
That I wonder is that it didn't do that well this opening weekend.
No.
It did $16 million according to IMDb. So I wonder.
There is a little controversy on that number, though.
How so?
And the reason is because a DVD quality print of the film was leaked early from an insider at Lionsgate, and it got millions of downloads all over the world. So they're wondering if that actually hurt the piracy, or did people just not want to go see the movie? I mean, one of these things is like, how can you prove it either way, really?
Well, I mean, I think you kind of could.
I don't know. Though. Millions of downloads seems like it doesn't seem like the movie that you need to see again.
But were those people going to see the movie anyway? You don't know.
Well, I think.
I bet they would have.
I bet you they would have.
Because, okay, well, like, then, if, for example, someone offered me that, I would be like, no, thanks.
Right.
Then you guys have made it a bit more definitive, actually. Now you're kind of convincing me, like, yeah, that probably did hurt the...
Yeah.
So it had a great opening weekend, just not financially.
Right?
Yeah.
In terms of just eyeballs.
Yeah. So
it's like our business. Got a lot of downloads.
Yeah. So definitely there was interest in the film before it came out. It generated a fair amount of online buzz. And of course, you know, what we always say is, please don't pirate or download movies.
That,
you have to pay for your movies that you want to see.
But Expendables 3. Here's the thing. If you did do that, then you need to pay your penance and go spend money on an indie film.
That's fair.
You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Robin Hood it. I can hide behind some Robin Hood rationalization. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Just bullshit. But
Go rent Copland.
What if people misunderstood and were like, so then I rented Robin Hood Prince of Thieves, Graham, and
That's not what he meant. Why am I giving that money?
Don't see that for sure, guys. Mm-hmm. If you feel like, if you hadn't seen it, you don't need to see it.
If you did that again, then you need to give money to charity.
Then
donate blood. Like, you really
it's compounding. It's a compounding situation.
Give money to ALS.
Yeah.
Do that.
Yeah. Do the bucket thing. All right, so let's talk about, Janet, you saw Finding Vivian Maier?
Yeah, I can't remember, to be totally honest with you. It might have come out a long time ago. I'm really sorry. But I feel like I remember it being a new and noteworthy in iTunes. It was, it probably was a straight to streaming kind of thing. But
well, the thing about documentaries is that, I mean, technically they... Like, it came out technically last year, but when...
By the time it rolls around to actually get to see it.
When anyone can watch it.
Because I'm sure it was, like, at a festival, this and that.
Right.
But I feel like I saw it the second it came up, because I had seen trailers for it, and I was like, I can't wait for this. And
that counts.
Right?
Yeah,
So I watched it, and I loved it. I thought it was so fascinating. It's a really interesting, genuine mystery about these... phenomenal photographs that are discovered by this young guy. And actually, shout out to Charlie Siskel, who is very much in the kind of comedy community. He's like a producer on Andy Daly's show on Comedy Central. He used to work with Paul and me on Dinner and a Movie. And he directed the film, co-directed it with the guy with John Maloof,
so
who found
exactly
the photos.
What this whole
John Maloof is this kind of guy who is very into grabbing auctions stuff. And but has like a pretty discerning eye, and he bid on, I think, like, initially I feel like it was just like a crate of undeveloped film, because he's really interested in Chicago and like old historic pictures of Chicago and stuff like that. And he started developing these negatives, and he was like, and they are phenomenal. Like, they're incredibly great. And he knew that, like, the photographer's name is Vivian Maier. So, and he's not a photography buff. So in his mind, he was like, oh, okay, so this is just this famous photographer, or this must be well-known in Chicago photographer or something. And so he starts kind of like poking around, and there's nothing. Like, I think he Googles her name and there's nothing. And he's like, who is this person? And so the film is really this unfolding of him trying to find out who this woman was and why she never showed a single photograph really to anyone. And then it turns out to be, there's like 100,000 negatives. Like, he ends up connecting the dots and getting a hold of all of her stuff, because some people that she used to, I won't give it away, but people that she used to be in their lives, they had saved all of her stuff in a storage unit. But she was also like a pack rat, a bit of a hoarder.
Wow.
So he ends up with all this stuff and is trying to kind of make sense of it all, and using it to sort of help him put the patchwork quilt together of who this woman was and find people who knew her. And I I gobbled it up. I thought it was such an amazing documentary. It's so interesting.
That's so amazing.
And the art itself is beautiful. And now it's her stuff is being sold. Mm-hmm. And well, some of it's color, I think. And a lot of it is being sold now in galleries, like, I think all over the world.
That yeah. kind of very stuff. Cool. That is so, and I love when documentaries are hatched that just sort of happen. Yeah. Like, well, we'll just do this thing. And it's like, well, we got to figure it out. And you're on. So you're going on the journey with the filmmaker.
Totally.
As they like get the thing in the mail or whatever, you experience that with them. It's such an amazing thing. So that's cool. Check it out. Finding Vivian Maier. I'm sure it's
one of those documentaries too that I'm sure as he was shooting wasn't even sure what he was going to find.
Yeah, I mean, they did a really great job of the way they roll out the interviews with the people who knew her. It really does have this kind of interesting arc on its own too. So I think there was also a lot of, you know, afterthought of when they had all the footage and kind of going, okay, how do we want to tell this stuff that we found, because they're able to kind of create that same, which sometimes you don't get in a documentary as much, even though it's cool to be on that journey. They create like a kind of a great Save the Cat arc too, in a way where you are sort of like, oh, this, okay, really? Okay, well, I guess, all right. Well, like it resolves itself kind of, but there's a really interesting third act where you're like, ugh. And that's really well done. You know, for that reason, it feels very complete.
She finds Tiny Tim's ghost.
That's right. That's right. I was super freaked out when you said that. I assumed that you had seen the documentary. Now I really don't know what to think. Yeah, so definitely a huge recommendation from me.
Excellent.
Well, the other film that I watched it's out on DVD and now it's out on video demand is Locke. I finally got around to seeing that. We both wanted to see that.
Yeah.
This is the Tom Hardy
in a car movie.
It's basically, there's three shots in the whole film. There's the shot of him getting in the car in the beginning, and then there's this kind of shot at the end that's sort of a wide pan. The rest of the movie is him in the car talking on speakerphone. He just had gotten a piece of news. I'm trying to think like what of this I should tell you right. guys to basically
just the setup.
He gets this shocking kind of piece of news that really unravels his life. And he makes a decision that could potentially really unravel his life. And there's this ticking clock of he's a foreman and there's some giant construction job. Like they're going to pour, they keep saying like whatever, 300 million metric tons or whatever it is. And this is the biggest pour in European history. And everyone's like,
they're building the Death Star.
They're building the Death Star. And he's like, I can't be there tomorrow. And everyone's like, what the, you can't be there. And he has to methodically explain why to all these people, his family, this guy that works underneath him, who's like he's like, now you're in charge, and this guy's and he's like, yeah, you can do it. And it is such a in the choice that he makes, he starts kind of talking to himself in the car as you would, well, as I talk to myself in the car a lot, but
I for sure do.
Oh yeah, that's why I always wear a headset so I don't look crazy.
Smart.
No, just practicing a bit.
Yeah, yeah, I'm doing skits.
Yeah.
Ugh, that's even worse. Wear the headset so people don't think you're an actor on your way to an audition.
It's horrible.
No, I'm crazy. It's better.
Yeah, you'd rather, for sure you'd rather in LA.
So, and he kind of reveals like, one of the reasons why he's making this decision is it kind of comes out like didn't have the greatest relationship with his dad. And it's sort of like, well, I'm doing the right thing in his mind and all this stuff. And so it's just, it's one of those movies that's just an amazing piece of acting. Because he's acting while driving.
He's only reacting to voices.
He's only reacting to voices. So they have, you know, I guess you'd call them amazing voice actors, but they're, and I'd love to know how they actually did it. I mean, I'm sure they just had them on cell phones doing their dialogue. And so it was really And he does, I think he's such a great actor. He does this amazing job of just, he's this guy with this kind of good job, regular life, wife, kids, and it's all kind of, but the thing I liked about it, it wasn't like outlandish. It wasn't like, oh, there's a terrorist or there's a bomb.
Yeah, is it, I mean, forgive me for not knowing, but is it like, is it, would you say it's drama or is it suspense or is, it's action? It's not action.
It's not suspense. There's not some crazy crime. It's a thing that could happen in any one of our lives.
Right. Okay.
You know, and how would you deal with that?
Yeah.
So that's what I like. Because when it first started, I was like,
does it feel gimmicky?
No.
Oh, wow.
It doesn't. It feels,
that's an achievement then.
That's how they did it. They did it like, if this happened to you and you told your friends the story, you'd be like, and so I had this, you know, 3 hour or 2 hour, whatever, 2 hour car ride. And in that car ride, I just had to make all the most difficult calls in my life. And you'd be like, oh man. And they like, when you tell the story, I had an acting teacher would always say like, this is the day. Like, that's how you need, like, this is the day that you talk about where everything, your life changed in huge ways. And so you're seeing this happen. You're seeing this regular guy. It's not a spy thing. There's none of that. It's just how you would have to deal with this and what it uncovered and triggered about who he was. It's an amazing performance. And I was hesitant when it came in the theaters, 'cause I was like, God, I love Tom Hardy, but 2 hours in a car. I mean, you know, but it's riveting. Because it's well written and it is so realistic and human, and he, you know, in these phone calls has this, he's trying to like keep it together and we can get through this thing. And, you know, his business partners or whatever are going, what? Like,
oh my God, you're killing me. I mean, don't say, but now I'm really excited.
You
to
really
see
should
it
see
I don't
it.
Know.
And it's,
well, I have a question. Is Tom Hardy in a car a better movie than Ryan Reynolds in a coffin?
Yeah.
Okay.
Without a doubt. Just for the very purpose of
Let me tell you what I think it is, and I don't want you to tell me that I'm wrong. What I think it is that Tom Hardy's character has decided to work at Hooters. It's a huge life change, and he has to explain to everyone why he wants to work at Hooters. But don't tell me if I'm right. I want to be surprised and or insmuggened. Not a word.
I want to know the name of the character voice you were just doing.
That was a, I want everyone to know that this is a comedy voice. I'm not making a serious guess. This is the person who makes bad guesses and it feels like she's right. Invented on the spot.
I'm on board with this character.
Great. Great.
Yeah, this film I cannot recommend. And also I think it's it's a good film to watch at home.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like it, you know, I'm a big proponent of seeing movies on the big screen, but this is one of those movies you don't have to see it on the big screen. And if you missed
it's one shot.
It is. It's one shot. So there isn't the director does do some very cool camera work in terms of
In the car,
and not overly stylized, but just how the reflections of the things he's driving past go by him, just in sort of, and not like overly like me. I'm a director, you know. Like it wasn't that, but just I was like, wow, that was really cool, and it subtly helped convey what this guy's going through. Yes, he's in his car. Yes, he's driving on the freeway. He's got to do all these phone calls, but he's going through a huge life change. And it then, when you're going through something like that, it changes your surroundings. Like you're viewing your surroundings differently in whatever the thing is that you're going through. And I think the director captured that.
God, that's so cool, Graham. Yeah. I can't wait to see it.
Check it out.
Lock.
So now, I wanted to give you guys an update on my movie Asylum because of
other
you.
Other than the Expendables.
Other than the Expendables, two actors.
No, I don't remember what Asylum is.
Oh, it's a whole story of a movie that I made.
Our fans already know about it. He made this movie. It was ridiculous. The whole.
It got ruined in Bulgaria, and then they asked me to come in and save it and make it a comedy, and then they stopped talking to me, and now somebody in South Africa found it on DVD. and sent it to me. And he said this great email. It was like, I've never seen anything like this. I have to watch it again because I'm not even sure what I just saw.
Yeah.
Wow.
Because what they did is they did release the comedy version. So it's got Mike Schmidt and another editor talking over the footage, making fun
it's
of it.
It's got Dean Haglund.
It's got Dean Haglund. Okay. We've got this, the sketch segments that I directed are in there. They're cut up a little bit. Some random chopping, which is ridiculous. But the thing that they didn't do, they never rebranded the film as a comedy. So people are now getting it thinking it's a horror movie and then watching it. And it was supposed to be rebranded as Death of a Horror Movie. Because there's even in the movie, I have like, you know, there's shots of the poster, like as they're ruining the movie. Actually, I was able to get the poster and the shots in. So now people are getting this movie thinking it's a horror movie and then looking at it like, what's going on? I don't understand. So it's unbelievable how they could even screw it up at the end. So at the end, I'm like, well, no, we made it a comedy. Now you're trying to trick people into thinking it's still a horror movie. Did you not want to pay to create another poster? And I think that's what it did. They didn't want to pay to create another cover.
This
for
is
the
where
DVD.
I wish we could get secret hidden cameras and record these.
Oh my God,
talking.
It would have been great if we'd have gotten cameras into After Dark Studios. It would have been absolutely hysterical. I can only imagine what they were talking, like what they were saying.
Yeah, and I wish we could do like an MST3K then of that meeting.
Right?
Yeah.
So, and then I saw on IMDb because our fans are posting in the message boards, like, yeah, you got to listen to Mike Schmidt's. Story in the of the what it was like doing it, and then they said I just told the whole story, and they give like the podcast episode numbers. This is in the IMDb message boards, and then somebody said that it's coming out in the UK like in the fall. So people are checking release dates in each country to see if it's actually coming out.
We gotta go on a road trip.
I know,
like,
we gotta find it somewhere.
I mean, it does sound like there's an opportunity for like the weirdest guerrilla marketing ever.
Right.
About what a shitstorm this is.
Yes.
It's just like, well, I'm going to be in Hong Kong and Beijing and Shanghai. So if it's screening anywhere in those cities,
I'm sure you'll
like
be able to find it.
Sandwich board on you, either, on either side of
you'll
you.
Be able to find like a non-pirated copy there. I'm sure somewhere.
I'm gonna go into video stores and look.
Well, it's definitely in Japan.
Okay.
It's called. They renamed it SWAT versus Devil. In Japan.
Amazing.
All right, Sanai, if SWAT versus Devil is playing while I'm there, you guys
I think
me.
She already bought one. She's going to bring it to the podcast festival because I want to see the Japanese cover.
Amazing.
So somewhere there in the world, there is a movie floating around with Stephen Rea from The Crying Game, Mike Schmidt, myself, and Dean Haglund in it.
Amazing.
And a bunch of bald Bulgarian actors with horrible accents.
Who are in The Expendables 3.
And two of them are in The Expendables 3.
So we know where they shot that movie.
Yes, exactly.
Yeah. Wow.
That's so funny. I'm watching the Facebook feed. I was like, just name the one actor who's in both movies. And then multiple names start coming up. I'm like, wait a minute.
You know what's going to happen?
So there's like two. And then somebody even put, well, this guy, does this count? He was one of the stunt doubles. I'm like, sure. Now it's three. Yeah.
The great thing about this now that we have this like global detective team.
Yeah, seriously.
On this. You know, years from now, After Dark is going to release a movie and use some of that footage in it.
Absolutely.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like 5 years from now, they're going to go, oh my God, I saw some After Dark footage in, you know, Goblin Trainer.
Oh, God. Yeah. I can't wait to see Goblin Trainer.
Goblin Trainer.
That's the sequel.
It also sounds like it might be a comedy. I'm so confused. Oh my God.
It's a comedy or is it? What? Goblin Trainer? Why do you keep doing this?
So keep searching all over the world. You might find the movie before I do.
This is the greatest whodunit ever.
I know.
We need to piece it together. I don't know. How did we? Well, we'll just keep giving you guys updates.
Yeah, yeah. Actually, you guys are giving us updates, which is so awesome.
You know, oh, sorry.
I was going to say, you know what we should do at PodFest? Mm. Since we're going to do a video stream, we should show some clips of it. Like from SWAT versus Devil or whatever version we have at PodFest. So anyone who does the video stream can watch SWAT versus Devil.
Oh, I will see if I can clear the rights to that because somebody still has them.
I'll find out.
But yeah.
I want to see like a weird, almost like a thunderclap of a screening that happens worldwide where everyone in the world is watching the same ? Movie.
Yeah.
With like Skyping or some sort of like
oh that's a great
like
idea
the idea of like everyone
we should have a global
it,
Skype
right
party.
Yeah, that's a great idea.
That is a great idea.
I think that'd be really
idea.
Cool. And like people would Let's talk about that and like press would hear about that and stuff, I think.
Janet Varney, genius.
Nice. We're going to set that up. That's
right. Done.
Mm-hmm.
Thunderclap.
And I want to be a producer on Goblin Trainer.
Done.
Great.
Well, we already have written a part for you.
Oh! Yes.
You're the Goblin Trainer's scientists.
Wonderful. Yeah. Started as a dolphin trainer.
Of course. Yes.
Wanted more of a challenge.
Yeah. Then finally
got into the dark arts.
Then you start making guesses, and it sounds like a comedy voice, but you really are being sincere right. with your
because
questions.
I happen to love both dolphins and goblins.
Every time you do that voice, everyone's like, oh no, something bad's going to happen when she does her improv yeah. comedy voice.
The music stab starts.
This thing writes itself.
Yeah.
Goblin Trainer, summer 2016.
Yeah. Side note, anyone who's ever writing a movie and says this thing writes itself has a stinker on their hands.
Yeah. yeah.
If you find yourself saying that, maybe throw that out and yeah. start over.
Yes. That's a sign the story is trying to get away.
That's yeah. right.
It's writing itself into cliche time. Yeah.
So now we actually have a little ad read from
Hello.
one of our Kickstarter backers for earbuds. This is Zach Gowan.
Zach's got a nice little bar yeah, and grill out nice there little, in Georgia.
It's a Locos grill and pub.
These are amazing accents yes. we're doing today, Locos. These are
on beautiful San Simons Island.
Okay.
This is
right.
a German yeah. island? Yeah. This yeah. is in Austria?
Yeah, when you go, you go, papers, please?
Okay, so
for your, in your mind, for your grill also, and pub? Austrians are also very tentative and confused.
Yeah. Yes.
Right.
yes.
I think you are yeah. right. But maybe you are.
Would you like a beer or some hot wings?
Good to know.
This is where the Goblin Trainer rap party we're going to yes. have.
It's in San Simons Island in Georgia, locally owned and operated. We sling wings.
Sling them.
So you sling them, yeah.
I will sling your wings.
Sling your wings. Or perhaps you'd like your wings you. On the Russian front.
Hogan. Oh, it's an episode of Hogan Zero.
And they have top-notch burgers, great live music, and a vast beer selection. Delivery, takeout, and catering as well. Voted St. Simon's number one sports bar.
I tell Is that you a real island?
Yeah.
Georgia, I don't know why I didn't, for some reason, I didn't
it's
realize
weird. There's
that.
All these amazing little islands off of like Georgia and South Carolina. And they,
I didn't
like,
even know.
These
I knew about the islands in off South Carolina, but I did not know.
Georgia's got them. And here you what, Locos. Here's what you should do, Zach. Have, if you can find a asylum, have a screening party at Locos.
Yeah, if you can find a DVD, you may have to import it from another country.
If it's SWAT versus Devil.
Yeah, whatever. It'll still work.
And then have a bunch of the... Here's what you do, Zach, at Locos, is then, for that, then have a bunch of wings or sauce or whatever and name them after asylum characters.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. No question. Got to do it.
It's one of the great things about the movie, too, is I gave everyone American names, but so it's a bunch of Bulgarians with American names.
You can call me Mike.
Yeah, you can be like Tanner. My name is Tanner.
Tanner.
So amazing.
Yeah.
Tanner. So go to Locos Bar and Grill, you guys, and support a local guy. That's what this the show's all about, and podcasting is all about. Is where, you know, we always say vote with your dollars, and we obviously mean like go to indie films and stuff like that. But this is a way, you know, this guy Zach's place Locos at this island in off of Georgia is better than a big crazy chain.
Yeah, it's better than Hooters.
Oh, for sure.
Yeah, I'm just
there's no question about that.
Yeah, I've never eaten at Hooters, but I'm gonna guess it's better.
Yeah,
I 100% guarantee.
And
if you go all the way to Zach's place, Locos, you get some wings, and you think that Hooters are better, I will personally reimburse you.
Fair enough.
For that purchase.
I thought you were going to punch him in the face.
I will personally punch you in the face.
In what character voice would you do that?
I'm not sure. I might be a whole new guy.
Oh,
yeah. I might be a dude. Yeah. Face punching guy
in St. Simon's Island,
guy.
Georgia.
Oh, I'm gonna pinch your face. I'm gonna pinch your face so hard. I'm gonna pinch your baby's face.
You got an adorable cheek. I could eat you up like a Christmas candy.
Threatening, isn't it?
It's very, very.
Yeah.
So you can check out Loco's Grill and Pub at facebook.com/Loco St. Simons.
Do it. Tell us how the wings are and have an asylum screening party.
Yes, and make sure you name every wing after a Bulgarian actor. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. These are the Bulkelviov wings.
People are like, I don't know. I can't. Just bring me some wings.
Are they
I need you to say the name of the wings, please. Yeah. I can't print. I don't.
Bring me something with a lot of V's and T's in it.
Is it medium spicy? Can I just get whatever guy's that? Like,
they are the spicy. Yeah.
Sure. Oh, you want a bowl of Tanner?
Sure. Sure. Easy. Good stuff. Shout out to Zach.
Thank you, Zach. All right. So let's talk about you run SF Sketchfest.
I do.
And you just did a, what would you call it? A summer?
We called it the SF Sketchfest Summer Social.
Hello.
And it was just four shows at the Castro Theater, which is this great 1,400 seat, beautiful historic theater in San Francisco. We like to do a little summer programming in part because I love being in San Francisco in the summer because it's foggy and beautiful instead of hot, crispy, and smoggy. But we did an anniversary screening, 35th anniversary screening of the Muppet movie, the original Muppet movie. And Dave Goles, who was a huge part of the Henson Company and originated Gonzo and, you know, puppeteered and voiced and did a bunch of stuff on Fraggle Rock and Labyrinth and Dark Crystal, all that. Muppet Show. He's a Bay Area guy. So we've basically every year we're like, all right, what Henson thing can we do? Because we love him so much and we love having him out. And so this time he was able to actually bring a Gonzo puppet and puppeteer the puppet and do a Q&A as
with
himself
Gonzo.
And also as Gonzo. So little kids got to like ask Gonzo. And I tweeted this, this little kid could not, like, he was so shy. As soon as the mic got into his hand, he just like could, he would be like, ah, and then he would get shy and hide behind his parent and then get shy. And Gonzo was like, I'm on a meter. And finally, this little kid is like, Gonzo, what exactly are you? And he was like, the jury's still out. We don't really know. At some point, I thought it was from outer space, but that turned out not to be true. So it was just amazing. Yeah, this little kid ended up asking the question that, like, the entire audience erupted in applause because everyone was like, ooh, seriously, though?
No one's ever asked
that.
So wait a minute. Jim Henson retconned Gonzo's alien origin?
I'm not sure. I just know that, I don't know the backstory on – I think they never really resolved that, and now
there was one movie where it was other aliens came down, but then they never mentioned it again.
Yeah, so, I think maybe they backed off of that.
Loved that movie so much when it came out. I remember seeing that in the theater and thinking, "Well, I love the Muppet TV show," and then the songs in it.
Oh,
you know,
my God, Paul Williams is a genius.
Rainbow Connection, and
honestly, I'm going to go back there someday. Is like one of my favorite songs, if not my favorite song in life, not just like in kid life or Muppet life or Paul Williams life. Like, I think it's an amazing song. The lyrics are phenomenal.
The lyrics of it, you're just like, this is so hopeful and beautiful. And
it's a great movie.
That's what the movie was about. I remember I saw the movie so many times in the theater and would love to have seen it on a big screen.
It was totally magical. And I got to interview Dave because I sort of became that person who's like, I'm interviewing him. So now every time it's me. But that's kind of how I started the Q&A or just the interview with him was I had forgotten about this line, but there's this line at the end where Doc Hopper, played by the amazing Charles Durning, of course, is, you know, it's a showdown in that Western town. And Kermit's kind of trying to be pacifist and, you know, get Charles Durning over to his side. And he's like, you know, we're just this group that, this is like my hint at a Kermit the Frog voice, but like, we're just this group that kind of had the same dream. And I guess that dream makes us kind of like a family. And so I was so moved by that line. And so when we started, I said, I feel like that line kind of sums up what it must have been like to work for Jim. Right. And he was like, yeah, that's exactly it. Like, we grew this dream of, because there just wasn't anything like the Muppets.
Nothing.
Really, you know? And they grew it all together. All these people came together that, like, had this weird love of puppetry.
Premiere,
and,
like, on Ed Sullivan? It was like Kermit the Frog started. Like, it was a long time.
There's some amazing old footage of, like, original weird kooky stuff that Jim Henson was doing. It's amazing on its own. I mean, you really see, his brain worked differently. Like, right. the fact that it was able to funnel into something that everyone fell in love with is also remarkable in its own right. Because some of the stuff he's doing, you're like, he is so out there.
Right.
It's awesome.
I mean, even the stuff that people don't know about as much, like The Storyteller is an amazing series. And there weren't that many of them, but they're really good. John Hurt narrates these fairy tales. And, you know, Jim Henson, they made all the creatures and the characters, and it was amazing. But even, like, Labyrinth. I love Labyrinth. It's such a great movie.
So great. Yeah.
What else did you guys show?
Then we did, well, we've been doing this thing with Doug Benson, where he does the Doug Benson movie Interruption, and he interrupts the Twilight series. So we made it to Twilight Eclipse, the third movie.
Wow.
And I think we're going to try to do the fourth and fifth sometimes soon also at Sketchfest.
I've seen every single one of those films.
I only saw the first one. I think I saw it.
That's
like,
why it's, that's an achievement that you got through that many.
Yeah, no, it's really a survival thing. everyone's excited. And now I think people are invested, so they do keep coming back. Like, that part of you that wants the completion of, I watch Doug Benson interrupt every single one. So that was really fun. And then at night we had an Office Space screening, which it's the 15th anniversary of Office Space, which made me feel like, oh, I thought that just came out. So that's how you know you're getting old. And Stephen Root came and did it. It did a Q&A afterwards, but also kind of did the intro as Milton, his character, like did the, you know, stuttering. And then also we had a costume contest, which we sort of like, we kind of threw it out there almost like you can take this seriously or not. Just kind of like, pile on your flair and come to the da-da-da, so that it could just be also people being like, I'm not dressing up. But a bunch of people came wearing like green and white striped shirts with suspenders with flair on it. People were dressed up as Gary Cole's character, holding coffee mugs, sipping coffee And then we had like a, Steven had brought this beautiful, huge, huge poster they had signed. And yeah, but we did a applause contest where, you know, this guy who actually really was the spinning image of Gary Cole won. And it was really, really fun and a great opportunity to see, I can't say that for Eclipse, but another movie that, you know, was just great to see at a huge theater with hundreds and hundreds of fans who know the movie back and forth. You know, so every time a new character comes out, it's like Diedrich Bader has this amazing character he plays in the film. And the second you even hear his voice, everyone breaks out in spontaneous applause. And that's a really great reminder of like why it is fun to go to the movies and see something on
mass. It's a community event.
Yeah, instead of just seeing it at home. So
Awesome.
Yeah, it was really fun.
All right. Well, let's. What do we got coming out on the DVDs?
We've got Amazing Spider-Man 2.
All right.
I have to say this.
Didn't see it.
I have to say this movie. I will say this movie didn't surprise me. It was just as bad as I thought it would be. Like, and I went in thinking, well, maybe it'll be a little bit. No, it's a terrible film. If you've missed it, you did yourself a favor.
I mean, the thing. I know it's like broken record here, but when you put it up against all of these other amazing Marvel movies, it makes it worse.
Yeah, exactly. Like, really? You can't get even part of this right at all?
And it just compounds it. Guardians of the Galaxy just came out. Yeah. It was an amazing film, and you're just like, what are you doing?
You're getting every bit of this wrong.
How are you?
Literally.
Like, it's, did After Dark take over?
They put those executives in charge of the Marvel movies at Sony.
I can't even. I can't even say, oh yeah, watch it on DVD.
Yeah, it's just too much of a
bummer. It's so bad.
It's a waste of time.
Would you say if you're jonesing for that, you just go back to the Tobey Maguire movies?
Yeah, the first two. Just watch those again. If you really want to watch Spider-Man on the big screen, watch the first two Spider-Man
don't
movies.
Watch the third one.
Yeah, not the third one. But if I had to, pick,
don't watch the third one of five movies rolled into one movie.
Yes,
that was brutal. Fading Gigolo. Now, we haven't saw this, but we did have a guest on that had seen this film with John Turturro, who directs it, and
Woody Allen stars in it. Yeah.
What? Yeah. Oh God, I don't even know anything about this.
It kind of came and went. This movie it
very
wasn't
limited
out
release
for very long.
But I'm sure the timing is not amazing for something starring Woody Allen.
Right. No, I think that was a big.
And it was last year too, so it was probably.
Yeah.
Couldn't have been worse.
Mm-hmm.
But I heard it was pretty good. I haven't seen it yet. I do want
to
see it.
You know, it's supposed to be one of these films that's really John Turturro's movie, apparently. And for numerous reasons, obviously, he wrote and directed it. But I've heard good things.
Did he also, didn't he do that one that was like the theater? It was a movie. Was that his movie? I remember his sister was in it. He was in it. I thought he wrote and directed it, maybe. It was this movie about like a theater company that I kind of liked. It was very
oh, I don't know.
Sort of romantic and sweet, a little bit like sort of the magic of theater kind of that I'm forgetting right now.
Was it
Sorry to put everyone on the spot. I promise it was not. I think he did.
Let's go into this. Was it?
It's on the tip of my tongue. It's like one word.
Passione? Passione?
No.
Illuminata?
Mm-mm. Illuminata.
Ah.
Illuminata.
Illuminata.
Yeah.
I
need to check that out again because I saw it in the theater and I feel like I remember kind of loving it, but maybe I would hate it.
That came out in 1998, Illuminata, and with Leo Bassi, Henry Behar.
Again, just a few years ago.
Mm-hmm, right, just the other day. He's directing another movie so soon after his last movie came out.
Cool. All right, yeah, Illuminata. See that.
And the next one is Only Lovers Left Alive. This is the Jim Jarmusch artsy vampire movie. I think Tilda Swinton is in it.
Yeah, Tilda Swinton.
So I have not seen this one yet.
And Tom Hiddleston. Mm-hmm. And Mia Wasikowska.
Wachowski?
Sure,
close enough.
A depressed musician reunites with his lover through their romance, which has already endured several centuries. Okay.
Oh, yeah.
Because they're vampires.
All right. Well, Jim Jarmusch is either you really dig his stuff or you don't. So if you're a Jim Jarmusch fan,
you're either going to be on board or you're not.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So if you're not, like, if you're like, I don't know about Jim Jarmusch, then
this movie's not going to change your mind.
This movie is not for you.
Yeah.
It's like Sid and Nancy if they were vampires.
Exactly. That was the pitch.
Weren't they though? In a way,
kind of. Reverse ones, right? Heroin vampires.
That's right. Reverse ones. I don't even know what that means, but I agree. So I don't know. Interesting.
Okay, coming out this week, Sin City.
Sin City, A Dame to Kill For. How many Sin City movies have there been? Is this the third one?
I believe it is.
Was the second one something that really got as promoted as this one?
Well, the second one was really The Empire Strikes Back of Sin City.
Oh, here we go. Here we go. Here we go.
No. These movies...
I super enjoyed the first one.
So did I, but I've read all the graphic novels, too, and they're really good. I think one of the issues is you know, Frank Miller is such an amazing artist and writer in comics. When he gets into filmmaking, whether it's writing or directing, things have a tendency to fall apart a little bit. I'm not sure about this movie. I mean, I love the whole world that he's created. I love, you know, the graphic novels. I love the cast. So I'm going to go into it with an open mind because I want to like it. But
and it is we'll kind see. Of like a, I think it's, you're probably better served seeing in the theater, right?
This one, yeah. They're ultra stylized.
Because whatever's terrible about it will be more obvious to you if you're watching it at home.
So now, Robert Rodriguez, he's been directing them, but I think it's like he co-directs it with Frank Miller, this one.
To me, I just loved those graphic novels so much that I got to see them on the big screen. So I just, I forgave any...
Because I like the first
indiscretions
one too.
Of it. I just was like, awesome. I get they're bringing these awesome, these graphic novels that when I first read them was like, oh, like these were so intense. And it's
I remember
film noir pulp.
Oh, it's everything.
And today, I love it. And so I'm.
And the way he shoots them too, the way Rodriguez shot them is like he actually makes some of the. Comic book panels literally come to life. Not like an interpretation of them. No, that's exactly what it looked like on the page.
On the screen and make it move.
I remember seeing the first movie. It was our daughter had just been born. And Audrey and I hadn't gone out in a long time. We were like, you know, let's just go out. Let's go to dinner. We'll go to a movie. You know, we got family in town. Great. So we go out and we see Sin City. This is the movie. And about halfway through when the ultra violence kind of kicked in, my wife just looked at me like, this is the movie you take me to the one night that we get to go out.
So that I can have PTSD.
Yeah, exactly.
Date night, honey.
Yeah. So we both liked it. And
that's what keeps America.
God, I just really forgot there was this. I seriously thought this was the second one.
What is
the? Don't remember the second.
I think there's
Sin City.
I think.
But now that you're saying that, I feel like right. Like a Sin City 2.
Yeah.
I don't remember being in the theater even.
Hold on. We're gonna get to the bottom of this. Sin City, The Hard Goodbye. Oh no, that was a short. Oh, why this is so.
Maybe it is the second one.
Well, you look that up. I will say that I've never been less surprised by the addition of an actor to a cast than Eva Green. Like, you see her in the preview and you're like, oh, of course. Yeah.
There's Sin City and then A Dame to Kill For. Well, there was another one, though.
I could have sworn there was another one.
Maybe Frank Miller wasn't involved in the second one. This is driving. There's fans are screaming.
I know. Right. This is. Right, I feel like
just type it into Google Sin City movies and see what comes up. Okay. But there,
yeah, I'm gonna see. I definitely am gonna see it in the theater. I do have issues with the sort of like I want to feel like the sexism is like it's all in good fun, right, because you know we're lampooning da da da. But I am getting to an age where I feel like I'm less flexible on that stuff. Right. And so it's interesting to see movies like this because I feel like I'm making an agreement with myself that I'm not sure I'm comfortable doing, but I'll still see it. Yeah.
All right.
No, nothing?
No, so maybe it is the second one.
Yeah. It's just the second interesting one.
So I think also what we might be thinking of too is Frank Miller directed a movie called The Spirit. Right. Which was shot kind of in the same kind of green screeny style that kind of felt like, and now that I'm thinking about it, kind of felt like a Sin City movie.
It. Yeah, The Spirit, that's exactly right. It.
Okay. Never mind then. This is the second Sin City movie.
All right, everybody.
We're not editing any of this.
Yeah. Yeah. Enjoy the debate and that's the ignorance.
That's what it's all about in real time.
That's what podcasting's all about.
Yeah.
You get to listen to the correct things and the mistakes.
I only wish that your keyboard would have been louder so they actually could have heard the clackety clack of you.
Yeah. Okay. I'm going to see this.
Are we all going to see it?
We are. We're going to see it tonight.
We're all going to see it. We're all going tonight? Oh, we have plans? Okay. Yeah. All right.
Interesting.
Who's driving?
Okay.
No, I'll drive. I'll just have to move the car seat.
Okay. Yeah. All right.
I'm in.
Yeah. Great.
We all live in the three furthest corners of Los Angeles.
We did it. We really triangulated that.
We'll meet in Culver City.
Perfect. That's actually a good plan.
Yeah, that's good for you.
Yeah. Hey.
And maybe you. I'm losing on this one. Let's go to the ArcLight Pasadena, everybody.
Oh, yeah. See, this is why we can never see movies together, Janet. This happens every time. We'll go to the ArcLight Hollywood. That would work.
Oh, work very well for me. It's like 5 minutes away.
All right. Fair enough.
All right.
And then Neil will come too.
Century City. That's where we go. Ugh. Oh, Jana got mad.
Tired mad. The only kind of mad you can get when you think about driving in LA.
All right. Well, that is our episode, ladies and gentlemen. Thank you so much for listening. Is there anything else we got to talk
about? Yeah, you know what? I want to ask Janet about Legend of Korra because, as you know,
the
whole family's big fans of that show. But the last couple episodes disappeared from our television. We didn't get the same. Did something happen with Nickelodeon? Did they pull it?
Yeah, they pulled it off. They pulled it off of television because the overwhelming majority of our viewers didn't want to sit through, I guess, huge banner ads for SpongeBob and like loud Barbie commercials and commercial interruptions. So we get millions and millions of downloads online. And what they had done, I'm trying to make sure I know this stuff from what Mike and Brian were telling me, like when we talked about it at Comic-Con. But basically what they did was, because it's such a huge show for them, they tried to punish all of that. Now, all due respect to Nickelodeon, I don't mean that in a mean way, but what they did is they pulled it off of everything digital and only made it available on television for the third season. Mm-hmm. And people just watched pirated versions of it. And so then they reacted with the absolute reverse and pulled it off television and put it everywhere only on digital. So it's going to live on digital.
So After Dark executives are now in charge of Nickelodeon too?
Exactly. I mean, optimally, we wanted people to be able to have both options, but reason, Nickelodeon just like had a very averse reaction to making it only available on television and then the viewers being like, well, no, I'm not going to watch those commercials.
What about,
I don't want to see it
online. What about the other television shows on the planet?
Right.
Aren't they both on television and on digital?
I know, it's weird.
Because
it's weird.
I didn't even know the new season started just because the DVR knew and we started watching it. Mm-hmm. And then, because that's how we watch it. We watch it, you know, as the DVR records it, we watch it. And then all of a sudden I'm like, wait, where are the other episodes? Yeah. And then I do a search and nothing's coming up. It's like it's disappeared from television. So now
lives online. So can I see it at nick.com or just anywhere.
The full episodes.
The only thing I don't know if they've made a deal with again because it's so, it's a little weird. It's very business driven. It's like, because our, for example, not. Our season two, well, it is, but it's like weird because like our season two, like they don't have it. I think that they're having some kind of weird thing with iTunes where they're like fighting because our season two finale is one of the most downloaded television episodes in iTunes, period.
Wow.
So I think they got into some kind of bidding war. I don't really know, but I know now that DVDs? I don't think it's available. They haven't made the season three DVD that I know of yet. Mm-hmm. But you can watch it on Nick.com. I'm pretty sure you can watch it on pretty much every other digital platform except iTunes, because I think they're still working that out.
And
it's weird.
Television.
It's a weird situation. It's like the most, like this incredibly successful show that has now been messed up in terms of how it gets delivered to people.
It's fascinating because the other thing too about Nickelodeon is it's a more it's a higher age show than like the people who are watching SpongeBob aren't necessarily
right.
watching.
It's
like,
the only show of its kind on the network,
right.
And I think that was also a weird thing for them, and that's why they were like, well, maybe we should just put it all out.
Because they're
also
saying that like college kids are watching it.
Really?
Oh, for sure. Oh yeah. My god, when I do conventions, the majority of people there, and there's hundreds and hundreds of people who just come to even like a panel with me, which seems absurd. but like, there are people in their 20s, 30s, 40s.
Right. Yeah, it's not really a kids show. It's more like one of those shows that it's like kids can enjoy along with, adults and college kids.
Yeah.
And it's beautiful animation too. And I actually did a little research on it, and I was looking. It's like a new animation studio in Korea that this is like their only credit. That
yeah,
and like a couple other things.
Meticulous and devoted to
and
this
it's,
show.
And it's so smooth and it's so detailed. It's like really good animation. So when you're watching this show, you realize, oh, this show obviously costs some money. So we should pull it from the network.
I know. I don't know. I don't get it.
So
anyone from Nickelodeon PR is listening, guys, I did the best I could to represent what happened.
Yeah.
Oh, you didn't make it easy for me. You didn't make it easy for me to totally understand why.
Well, at least now
but there
I
is
know
an
where
amazing
to...
video game also.
Oh, okay.
That's just come out. That's phenomenal. Like it looks like if you've ever watched animation or a show and been like, I wish I could just jump into that and like be a part of it. That's what they successfully did.
Oh, cool.
It's
well, that's good
crazy,
to know too.
Crazy
for
cool.
Christmas.
Yeah.
You know? But
yeah.
Well, now I know, so we can watch the final episodes. I'll just pull them up on the. We'll just huddle around the iPad and finish watching the series.
Do you have an Apple TV?
Yeah. No Apple TV.
Well, I guess, yeah.
Hmm. Or we'll just buy an Apple TV to watch four episodes of a cartoon.
So. I do like an Apple TV, guys.
I love Apple TV.
Yeah.
Is there a Nickelodeon app for the PlayStation, perhaps?
Maybe.
Mm.
Maybe.
Look at this now.
Figuring it out.
But it's just cool because you can watch all the stuff you would watch on your computer. You can just basically share with your
put it on the
television
TV. Yeah.
And see stuff.
Okay.
Yeah. Apple TVs are great.
All right. Let me think about it.
Let us know.
on the air.
Let us know by next week.
Hold on.
I assume you want me back next week because we're back to back. But okay.
You know, marketing and executive choices aside, it's a phenomenal show. And
thank
we
you so
really,
much. Yeah, I'm so proud to be a part of it.
We enjoy it. I mean, it's one of those shows, like I said, that like I watch it, my wife likes it, and both my kids, I mean, literally 6 and 9, can't wait for the next episode.
That's great.
So it's fantastic.
Cool. I think one of my nieces just started watching it, who's going to be 6 soon.
Just love getting it. In there early.
Yeah.
That's right. Do it, Cora.
Well, guys, thank you so much for having me.
Absolutely.
It's a pleasure.
Where can,
coming on.
Where can people find you online?
You can find me on Twitter at Janet Varney. The JV Club has a Facebook page. I think if you just go on Facebook and type in the JV Club, you'll get there. My website is janetvarney.com. I feel like maybe the last time I updated that was a year ago. But it does have links to everything that I do that's current. So
sweet. Well, thank you so much. And guys, of course, come see JV Club at the Los Angeles Podcast Festival.
Oh, yes.
The whole weekend, September 26th through the 28th.
And let's say you live in another country and you can't make it out for the festival. We will be live streaming. That will be up very shortly. We're going to have those tickets available.
Awesome.
Yeah. But you can just buy those day of if you
literally day of day. We'd prefer you buy them early.
Yes. Yes.
But you could buy them day
you of. Could buy them. All right, well, thank you guys so much for listening. I will be in
China.
I'll be in Hong Kong the 25th through the 30th doing shows, and then we'll be in, let me make sure I got all these dates correct, then I will be in Beijing September 1st through the 4th. And Shanghai, September 5 through 6. So check that out. And of course, headlining the Improv in Hollywood, California, September 13th. That's a 10 o'clock show. Chris will be on that show. And
that'll be a great show.
That'll be a lot of fun. And if you use coupon code Graham, you get two tickets for $10, I think.
Oh, that's cool.
How can you go wrong?
You can't. You cannot go wrong, Chris. Mm-mm. And then I'll be headlining the Zanies in beautiful Rosemont, Illinois, September 17th through the 20th. And Wednesday, Thursday, if you wear your Palm Strike shirts, I think you get in like for free. And then if you use coupon code Elwood, I think you get in for $5. So check that out and go to the Podfest. That's all of our stuff. Like us on Facebook, you guys, the Twitter.
We wanted to let you know the summer movie preview is available in iTunes, mm-hmm. that episode that it made it over there. And also, a lot of you don't know that we actually have an app in the App Store, mm-hmm. for iPhone, Android, and you actually get a little bonus content. Each guest talks about a movie or does a recommendation, mm-hmm. and you get a PDF of the show summary.
And you can stream the episodes. You don't have to download them, so they don't take up space.
And the entire back catalog, exactly.
Mm-hmm. So check that out, you guys. All right. Thank you once again to Janet Vardy.
Thanks, guys.
and her cornucopia of voices.
Didn't know any of that was going to happen. Glad it did.
My name is Graham Elwood.
And I'm Chris Mancini. And as always, remember,
Han shot first.